About 5 years ago, my clergy colleague group gathered in Pasadena, California for a few days in conversation with Richard Rohr. The rhythm of our annual gathering in the second week of Easter involves each of us checking in, sharing our stories, praying and eating together, and we pool our education funds to retain a theologian to challenge us. Rohr certainly did. At the time, Rohr was working on his book on the universal Christ. So we were treated to his thoughts as they were forming and were taking shape on the subject, and his thoughts and suggestions have surely informed mine since then. I know the book has found a meaningful place in many of your spiritual journeys as well, and I commend it to you all. The clergy colleague group also builds in free time, and Kathy had already scoped out the Norton Simon Museum in Pasadena. It was within walking distance of our hotel, and so on a lovely spring afternoon, about like this one is today, right? We took in the remarkable museum collection, but there was one piece in particular that had drawn Kathy's attention already, and I would have likely missed it had she not pointed it out. Unceremoniously hanging in a corner of the large room serving as gallery for all sorts of art was a Baroque painting by Giovanni Battista Galli, who's also known as Baciccio. The piece is entitled Saint Joseph and the Infant Christ. And I've got an image out in the narthex if you want to see it. It's online as well. In this painting, Father Joseph is holding baby son Jesus in his arms. Now, Baciccio worked in Rome in the latter half of the 17th century when most of the art produced in Europe was of religious content. Indeed, most of Baciccio's art today still hangs in Roman churches rather than in museums, but two things make this particular painting noteworthy. First, that the subject was father with child rather than Madonna with child. For most of our Christian history, Joseph recedes to the background of nativity scenes. His is a supporting role in the story. More on that in a moment. But the second noteworthy detail about the piece is the interaction between father and child. Baciccio must have known something of fatherly love in his own life experience, because in this painting he has depicted Joseph and Jesus gazing upon one another in a moment of mutual affection that speaks volumes to their relationship. The carpenter's rough hands gently cradle the baby, who's unswaddled on a billowy white blanket. And the baby's reaching up to play with the soft beard of his adoring father. The two are lost in a shared moment. Now, Richard Rohr speaks of mirror neurons that form along the experience of foundational love given and received between parent and child, at least in the ideal. Baciccio would have known nothing of the neuroscience of mirror neurons, but he has captured the notion perfectly. And here's a really interesting thing. X-rays can be taken of paintings on canvas to see what lies underneath. It doesn't damage the painting, but it can speak to the artist's evolving idea, how their mind may change. And this painting of Joseph and the infant Christ has been x-rayed, and something changed Baciccio's mind. Because what lies underneath what we see today is a scene in which Joseph is looking serenely but sternly outward, is presenting Jesus in a more traditional way, a more traditional scene. And Jesus is looking up and slightly back, more curiosity about his father than affection. There's no real engagement between the two. But in the painting we have on the surface today, we are not shown anything. We are treated to a holy moment between Father and Son, lost in loving gaze with the other. So taken were Kathy and me that we have a reprint of the piece in our home, which now takes its place among the crèches and the Christmas tree each season. Did you know that Joseph never speaks in the Gospels? Have you ever noticed that? We're told he's a just man, that he's dutiful, he's supportive, kind even, and faithful to be sure, but he never speaks. Shepherds do. The Magi do. Mary does. But Joseph speaks through his actions. And God speaks to Joseph through angels who visit him in his dreams. Three times an angel whispers into Joseph's dreams, changing the world's arc forever. In today's gospel, we're within earshot of one of those encounters when Joseph is told to take the mother and child and flee to safety in Egypt lest Herod kill the baby. Joseph complies with trusting fidelity, and the purposes of God take root in human time. Now, here's something interesting that hit me this week. Every sermon I have ever preached on this passage, every sermon I have ever heard preached on this passage, draws the connection between the Holy Family as refugees fleeing to Egypt and the 84 million people who are refugees in our time today. We should see the faces of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus in these siblings of our modern time. And the church surely has something to say and do about that tragic reality. But today, with your indulgence, I want to bracket that thesis. Ponder it on your own time. Today, I want to ask us to stay focused on Joseph and his faithful way of listening, allowing him to come forward in the Christmas scene so that we might consider what it means for us to be open to angels delivering divine messages to us in our lives. What does it mean to be faithful? Setting aside for a moment all the traditional imagery of angels that is likely more diversionary than helpful, we need not picture angels as anthropomorphic figures with wings and flitting about. If that works for you, great. God bless you. If not, set it aside. Angels, friends, are merely messengers whose charge is to intermingle God's story with our own. That they often come in dreams at night is important, because dreams dance on the fringe of our daily lives, inviting us through portals of vulnerability into our most cherished aspirations and deepest fears. Dreams lay bare the artificial defenses we erect in the course of convincing ourselves that we can go it alone. And we can do so with much grace. Dreams are mostly written in symbolic language. And only when we glean their shadows for such meaning will we come to understand their true potential in our lives. But here's the beautiful point of it all, friends. The angels are really delivering God's dream to us and for us. Unless Joseph's dream is really God's dream for Joseph, born in trust that Joseph might just respond with courage and faith and faithfulness and hope, well, then what good was there to come from it all? Without Joseph mirroring the love for his child that prompted him to act as he did, how would Jesus have ever come to see the pattern of God's love for himself and for us all? And isn't that what really changed the world? The pattern is there for us too. It seems to me that we must be willing to yield into the possibility that God has a dream for us, for you and for me, that God might just be interested in using you and me and the wispy wisdom of our dreams to change the world. The great dreamers know this to be true, that in the creative chaos of now, God gazes upon us with a love by which we can find our way. Yes, God loves you that much to play a part in the pageant of God's story. The same God who has promised to come and be among us, Emmanuel. It's still Christmas, my friends. So let's live the dream, shall we?